Yesterday, the people in my track stood under a great painting in the Chicago Art Institute. It was the painting Old Man with a Gold Chain by Rembrandt. And the reason we had come to this great gallery was sitting under that painting to ask a critical question. And that question was, can we honor Rembrandt, the painter, and despise this magnificent painting before us, taking it perhaps off the wall as I praised Rembrandt's name and trampling on it as I walked back and forth? Some of you are getting the metaphor. Of course, we did much more in the museum that day, but the important thing that we did, I think, was to raise the very serious question, can we praise God and despise God's creation? I'll leave that answer to you, but it is an answer for which I have resolved the question in my life. I am deeply in love with the Creator, and I have been from the earliest time I can remember. I think it was when I was 3 years old. And my parents, already then, with their tolerance, allowed me to have a pet turtle in the backyard. That turtle was joined with another, and with another, and with another, and my zoo grew and grew. And as I came into my youth and into my teens, even parents would bring their children on Sunday afternoons to the backyard to show them these wonderful creatures. There was no doubt in my mind who the author of these creatures was. It was the same author of the word that I was hearing preached in church every Sunday, and which I learned in catechism and Sunday school. The author was none other than Jesus Christ, through whom all things were made, Colossians 1:15, through whom all things are held together, and the one by whom all things are reconciled to God. It was a marvelous growing up. I never aspired to be anything at all, and my dad said to me, Cal, just keep doing what you're doing. And he did that because one Sunday evening after church, he brought my Uncle Cy down the basement to see my 39 parakeets and several aquaria with tropical fish and the tarantula and the scorpion that had just had young, and they were all clinging to their mother's back. And when they went back up the stairs, I heard my uncle say to my dad, shouldn't you get him onto something important in life? Now, Friday nights, I did cut bread at my Uncle Cy's bakery, which he appreciated as productive. But mainly, I studied God's creatures. My horned toad, really a lizard, I studied on the front sidewalks of my house, where I let it out to plink ants off as they emerged from their burrows below. And my dad said to me, do what you love to do, then you will do it very well, and eventually someone will pay you for it. Of course he was right. By the time I finished my PhD in zoology, I had just pursued my love. I had pursued Ruth, my wife, who was here too, because I found this wonderful woman in the comparative anatomy lab at Calvin College. And she was stuffing a squirrel. I really knew that it was God's will to marry this woman. And she has supported me, just as my mother and dad have, through the remainder of my career right on up to the present. I received my degree, but I had some problems because as I got well into my PhD program, which was in zoology, I discovered that I was avoiding every course in physiology because I was deathly afraid of it. And so one semester I took 3 courses in physiology because I did not want to be deficient as a student of God's creation. And during the one of these courses in comparative physiology, William Dawson came up to me and said, "You're a very good physiologist. Would you do your research with me for your PhD in physiology?" And I said, "Yes, I would." And then my cell physiology course, for which I had a 68 average and I was sure I was flunking out of graduate school, was one after which the chairman of the department, Dugald E. S. Brown, who was totally unapproachable, for which we had formed the Brownian movement, to see if we could get one of us to get the courage to even speak to him. It was he, Dugald Brown, that called me into his office when I had received only a 68 average in his course, and he said, "Sir, we have a problem with you. You're on a National Science Foundation fellowship, and we want you to be the lead teaching fellow in cell physiology next year, and we have to have special permission from the National Science Foundation to allow you to do that." I said, "But Dr. Brown, I've only got a 68. He said, "Mr. DeWitt, that is by far the highest grade in the class." So boy naturalist became professional physiologist. And I and Ruth, my wife, went to the deserts of Southern California, and we lived right out in the desert during the summer, and we studied the desert iguana, and I became a reptilian physiologist. There is one person here who is doing his PhD under Wilbur Mayhew at the University of California at Riverside, and he has just applauded. He, too, is working on lizards. When I finished, I had taken 140 credits of courses in biology, plus other things, because I wanted to take every course that had been ever taught. And it wasn't because I was trying to get a degree. The degree came as a result of my love for the Creator. It's quite interesting because now when aspiring PhD students come and interview with me, now I'm giving you a secret. And I ask them what they want to do, And if they say, I want to get a PhD, I say, you're in the wrong place. Because I don't produce PhDs. I'm just in love with the creation. And if you're in love with the creation too, then you might want to join me. And as a byproduct of that love, you might someday get a PhD too. But the PhD is quite unimportant. Susan Drake is one of my students. She loves the Lord and loves the Lord's creation. Tuesday of this week, Dorothy Bourse just finished her PhD with me and flew out to become an assistant professor at Gordon College. And my students are people that I invite to love the Lord and love creation as I do. I remember one time, a few years ago, Carol DeVries and Jonathan Friedman, a Christian and a Jew. Each day when they came to the lakefront cafeteria for lunch together, which they shared, they always prayed together. And they knew what their work was about. It was about the love and care for God's creation. I went from my PhD work to the University of Michigan, and within 6 weeks I was in trouble because the business manager said in a memo distributed to all the faculty that the brush was going to be cleared out of the woods next to the faculty office building. Now, brush to a biologist is not brush. To a business manager, the world is comprised of brush, grass, and trees. Three species. To a biologist, there is a rich and wondrous fabric in creation, and that I had already eyed as my outdoor teaching laboratory, and so I took on the university administration. A very dangerous thing to do, I found out later, but I did not know. I taught, I did research on my desert iguanas. But as I was moving along through the woods, I noticed one day trucks coming to fill in the Rouge River Valley. This is the University of Michigan Dearborn campus where I had my first appointment. And I found out they were going to fill this valley, at 5 cents per cubic yard and bolster the academic budget. And I took on the administration again. And I remember very well when all the faculty backed me, and now I was there only 2 years, and that the administration opposed me, that Jack Dempsey, who was the person who was the dean of the College of Letters and Science, at a faculty meeting got up to chastise me in front of the entire faculty for disrupting the life of the university, for violating my trust as a professor, for getting embroiled into politics, and not staying where I belonged in my discipline. And Emmanuel C. Hertzler, a colleague of mine, a Mennonite, who was of great stature but very humble, stood up and said, Jack, you sit down. And Jack did not sit down because he headed up the entire Letters and Science division of the university. And Hertz stood there quavering and shaking and said, Jack, you did not hear me. Sit down. And that was repeated 4 or 5 times, and Jack sat down. And Hertz turned to the entire faculty and he said, this is what professors are made of. I want all of you to reject what the chairman has said here and stand behind this young professor. He spoke up because of his love for God and creation. Well, my whole career has been like that. I probably, of all professors at the University of Michigan, Dearborn was the one most in trouble most of the time. But I was promoted from assistant professor to associate professor in 3 years with tenure. And then I was promoted from associate to full professor in another 3 years. And that was unheard of. And I was made chairman of the Division of Mathematics and Natural Sciences when I was there for only 5 years. It was a small campus, but I had to hire and fire faculty, which was quite surprising that I had that. And of course, what I learned from that was that I should never aspire to be an administrator. When I went to the University of Wisconsin in Madison, our family left in 1970 for sabbatical. And I was there. I received an appointment there in 1972. Ruth and I and the family moved out onto a beautiful marsh where we still live. And I was heading a large team to do computer modeling of large complex systems, interactions between ecology, economics, and land use. And when we got aerial photographs, aerial imagery from satellites high in the sky above India, we discovered that the monsoon was out over the Indian Ocean and not over India as it should have been or as it normally would be, and we knew we were going to go into a world food crisis because of that. And I turned my team of 8 researchers, postdocs, and graduate students onto researching climate-food relationships, and we built computer models to place food reserves around the world so that when a crisis like this occurred again, we would have the right kinds of food reserves in the right places. And what happened was this model was put within a few months onto the National Security Council's computers in Washington, and soon we were offered several millions of dollars for supporting my research. And the chairman of the director of our institute told us that we were going to get this big money, and I asked where it was coming from, and he would not tell me. And in time, I found out it was coming from ARPA. So I put my staff researching ARPA and discovered it's the Advanced Research Projects Agency of the Department of Defense. That agency is the weapons development arm. And what they were planning to do with my model was to show where you could defoliate crops worldwide to bring nations to their knees. And in about 8 days, we figured this all out, and we all agreed that if we could not change the mind of our director, we would all resign. The reason I'm telling you this is because this is not easy to do. I had tenure, but the other 7 did not. And we met in a very big meeting. There were 40 that came to this meeting. We asked the questions again. The director of the institute said that they had arranged to launder the money through the National Bureau of Standards so that it would not appear that it was coming from the Department of Defense. We objected to that, and he was unyielding, and we all resigned. And that evening, we went to our computer models, and we changed all the statements. We messed up the data tapes, and he hired people for the next 3 years to try to make it work, and it never did. And I was in trouble for 15 years. Some 15 years later, after having shifted my research largely to theology and science, I got a complimentary letter from the chair of our Institute for Environmental Studies with a $200 raise. That's a signal in academia. And so the next year, I had many publications in the banner and in Church Life and the Church Herald and Decision Magazine and Moody Monthly and all of those things, along with my technical publications, and I thought, no harm listing those as my productivity record, given the circumstances, so I did. And then I got a letter saying that the Merit Review Committee advised me to get back to my major field, wetlands ecology. You hadn't heard about that yet. And get out of theology. So I arranged for an hour and a quarter appointment with the chair and said, you know, what is the nature of this request? They said, you should get back to your field. I said, well, would you like me to work on the physiology of desert reptiles? And she says, what do you mean? Are you trying to kid me? I said, no, I picked up wetlands ecology because that's where the cutting edge was back then, and people here threatened me if I would do that, and still I did it. And now I'm threatened when I tell you that Christian ethics is now the new cutting edge on the environment, and I'm a pioneer here, and you're preventing me from getting there. I spent an hour and a quarter, and at the end of that, a non-Christian woman, a wonderful woman, a good friend, said, Cal, I understand, but I won't be able to explain it. Why don't you be the first to go through the post-tenure review process at the university? Which meant that I had to build a case for what I've been doing and present it to a committee. And it was at that committee I was able to present my ethics, praxis, science triad, and that explained the relationship between Christian biblical ethics on the environment, environmental science, and how you put that into practice. It was opposed by the committee, but it was picked up by my board of visitors, the prestigious board that comes in to review the institute, and they asked me to give a presentation of 45 minutes on it, including the biblical teaching, and then I was invited to give a lecture on this as well. Right after that, 3 years ago now, I got an invitation to go to Washington, D.C. to testify on the Endangered Species Act. We arranged for a cougar to accompany me from the Columbus Zoo. I went on Fox television in the morning in Washington, then took the cougar by arrangement with Bruce Babbitt to his office, and he turned his office over to me for giving commentary to reporters. As the cougar sat on one of his front commodes right next to his desk, batting at the big booms with the microphones on them. And then we went to a large hotel with a big news conference, and I told the story of Noah's Ark. And I said, the Endangered Species Act is our Noah's Ark. Congress and special interests are trying to sink it. It was a daring thing to do, really. It messed up the Congress. It really did. Republicans and Democrats began to ask whether they answered to Newt, to Bill, or to the Lord. And many of them opted for the third choice, and people began to discuss endangered species biblically across the aisles. And when I returned to my campus, I thought somehow I would have lost my job. I was met in the hallway by a relative of Conrad Hilton. Hank Hilton, a Jesuit priest, met me in the hall and said, Cal, I have to talk to you. I just had a long session with the Pope, with the Black Pope. The Black Pope serves right alongside of the Pope, and he said, I went through 3 days of tremendous grilling about whether creation and the creatures are worthy of our care according to biblical principles. And I won. I convinced the Pope, and he's going to make a major statement. I went into my office, picked up the mail, and went into my academic planning council meeting, and there the director said, "Cal, we're so glad for what you did. Let's spend the first 15 minutes discussing it." What has happened, and I suppose this is the lesson from all of this, is that by just staying faithful and not worrying about whether I was going to lose my job or even my life, and with my family backing me in this, I was able to discover that the university is a place you can love. My students are people that you can love. My colleagues are people you can love. And if you love the Lord, you'll love your university. And as you love your university, you'll work to redeem it in ways that open through faithfulness. I was asked soon to be a member of the Outreach Council of the university to rewrite the 10-year review guidelines, which allowed things like I was doing to be counted toward tenure at the University of Wisconsin. We're going to sing Great is Thy Faithfulness, but what I'd like to say to you is that what we should be doing is honoring God's faithfulness to us by being faithful to Him.